This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions.
Today, in segment one, we have the presentation of an episode from CBS Mystery Theater for October the 10th of 1979. Don't worry, part two will be in segment two of today's show. The CBS Mystery Radio Theater was an ambitious effort by veteran radio producer Hyman Brown to rekindle interest in American radio drama, and should probably be considered to be reasonably successful, because every night from 1974 to 1982, the host of the program, E.G. Marshall for most of the program, and for the last couple of years, Tammy Grimes, would open up that old creaking door. You know the one. You might think, oh, plagiarism. The creaking door, that's the inner sanctum. Well, not really. You see, the inner sanctum was also a Hyman Brown production. Brown produced nearly 200 episodes of what he characterized as Fear You Can Hear, featuring many of the major actors of the time: Agnes Moorehead, Richard Widmark, Celeste Holmes, Mercedes McCambridge, Howard De Silva. Names that many of you recognize. He was also liberal in the adaptation of classic stories, as is the case today. Today's episode is the adaptation of the always controversial British poet and writer Rudyard Kipling. It's a story set, not surprisingly, in colonial India, about a British administrator who becomes more and more abusive due to lack of sleep and other things. The episode tonight is called The End of the Passage, as was the Kipling story, which was written in 1890. I won't waste any more of your time. Won't tell you anything more about this, because, well, really, here it is.
Into the world of the macabre. One of them was the man who knew 19th century India better than any other, Rudyard Kipling. Our story is an adaptation of At the End of the Passage. A man by the name of Hummel is assistant engineer in charge of building a section of the Guadalajara Railroad line. Every Sunday, three friends visit him in his shabby, ramshackle cottage to play cards, gossip, and share a meal. In summer, the heat is sultry and oppressive. It is night, 101 degrees. Hummel seems to be possessed. With him is a doctor, a friend named Spursto.
I gave you morphia, Hummel.
Not enough, Spursto. I must have more. I can't sleep. I haven't slept for a week. I can't run fast enough.
You what? Can't run fast enough? What does that mean?
Chuba understands. My house boy. If I sleep only a little, I can't run fast enough. Please, Presto. More fear. So I can run.
Our mystery story, At the End of the Passage, by Rudyard Kipling, was adapted especially for Mystery Theater by Roy Windsor. It stars John Beale. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act. In the 19th century, the smell of the bazaars, the rains, the heat of the sun-scorched earth, all seen and recorded unerringly by Kipling, a man born in Bombay and who spoke Hindustani. India then was more a continent than a country. England built roads and railroads under great difficulties. One of the rail lines being built in the northwest was the Guadalajara line. Hummel came out years ago and was assistant engineer of the project. Dr. Spurstow was medical chief, endlessly alert to cholera. A man named Loans was civil service, and Mutram was from the Indian Survey Office. Three men who on Sundays sought each other's company as Hummel awaits them.
Chuma! Where the devil are you?
I am here, Sahib.
Oh, so you are.
You lie down, master.
Perhaps I should. Bring me a soda water, Chuma.
Dr. Spurstow will make you well.
I am well. There's nothing wrong with me. It's the heat. I just can't sleep. No civilized man can sleep when it's 104.
I bring you the soda water.
No, it does me no good. Fans hardly moving.
You need much rest.
There's no time for rest. Work. Heat.
Too bad about Sahib Givens.
I'll sit on the veranda and wait for them to ride up. Go about your business. Make certain the dinner is good or I'll skin you alive.
Yes, master.
Why are you sitting out here? You're as red as a radish.
Well, come in, Spurso. Lounge? Where's Mutram?
Still in the desert. Couldn't make it.
Why not? What will he do about Whist? Inconsiderate of him. Can't the Indian Survey Office spare him one day?
Well, he does have to come 100 miles by rail and 30 more by horse.
Well, come in, come in.
Don't be hard on Mutram. Don't forget that I left a cholera-stricken camp of coolies to look after themselves for 48 hours.
I'm overwhelmed by your sacrifice, Doctor.
Have you got a bad in your trousers?
What is the matter with you?
Never mind his bad manners, Lance. Glass of beer will cool us all off.
Maybe it would. I have none.
Oh, dear.
Beer ran out. I've written and wired, but the trains don't come through regularly yet. Soda water.
Yeah, it's got any fresh reading material?
Last week's Gazette of India. My brother sent it out. It's rather amusing. Listen to this, Lounge. An MP's speech to his constituents. I assert that the civil service in India is the preserve of the aristocracy of England. The aristocracy takes good care to maintain their lavish scale of income.
Oh, that'll do.
Yes, I've used 3 months' pay to have that gentleman spend a month with me and see how one fares with the independent native king.
The aristocracy, what rubbish.
old Timberside, the king I've in mind, has 3 millions in jewels and coins under his palace, and the state of the people is enough to make you sick. And what can I do? Nothing.
Sooner be with you, Doctor.
Oh, would you?
I don't think so. About 15 deaths a day, and the poor devils look at you as though you ought to save them. Lord knows I've tried everything.
How do the cases run, generally?
Very simply indeed. Chlorodyne, opium pill, chlorodyne, collapse, nitre, bricks to the feet, and then the burning gat.
Aye. The liberal space at the head of the stairs leading to the river, where the bodies are cremated.
And here we are, the aristocracy of England.
It's too bad about Mottram. We need a fourth for whist.
Well, Hamill here is the lucky man. He has an actual roof over his head. He sees one train a day. He has books, pictures, and the society of the excellent subcontractor Jevons, besides the pleasure of receiving us weekly.
Jevons, there's an idea. Can't we dig him up, Hamill?
Oh, yes, but he wouldn't be much good to us. And it would be awkward. He passed on last Monday.
Oh, I didn't know.
But it would be awkward to dig him up. You have a nasty sense of humor, Hamill. How did he die?
By his own hand. Cholera and fever give a man a week's grace, as you know.
Any explanation?
I judge no man in this weather. He had a touch of the sun, I imagine. After you fellows had left, he came over and sat with me on the veranda. He told me he was going home to see his wife. He rambled on tediously.
And?
I got the apothecary in to look at him, and we tried to make him lie down. After an hour or two, he rubbed his eyes and said he believed he'd had a fit. Why this unusual interest, Spurso?
I like the man. Go on.
He went to his bungalow and began cleaning a rifle. He told the servant he was going to shoot buck in the morning. Naturally, he fumbled with the trigger and shot himself through the head. Accidentally, of course.
That was the report.
I'd have wired you, Spursto, if you could have done anything.
You're a queer one, Hamill. If you'd killed the man yourself, you couldn't have been more quiet about the business.
What does it matter? I've got a lot of his overseeing work to do in addition to my own. I'm the only person that suffers. Jevons is out of it. By pure accident, of course. But out of it.
Why didn't you let it go as suicide?
Well, there was no direct proof. A man hasn't many privileges in this country, but he might at least be allowed to mishandle his own rifle.
That's an odd way of putting it.
Well, someday I may need a man to smother up an accident to myself. Live and let live. Die and let die.
Look here, you take a pill. You're white in the face.
Liver out of order.
I can't sleep, that's worse.
Well, what do you take for it?
Nothing. I haven't had 10 minutes sleep since Friday.
Well, I'll patch him up later on. Is it too hot for a ride, do you think?
It's where to? We shall have to leave by 8.
So what is there to do?
Hamill?
Hey, what's that in the corner? You see there, under those papers and that remnant of glass.
Why, have you a musical turn?
Look! Spurstow, a bagpipe! I wonder if it plays.
Oh, it's a wretched instrument.
How did you come by it?
I can't remember. Schumer found it. I should have discarded it long ago.
Splendid, Lance. The touch of hope.
Can you play glory to thee, my God, this night for all the blessings of the light? That shows we really feel our blessings.
What an old hypocrite you are, Hamill.
Leave that hymn alone. It's associated in my mind with the most sacred recollections.
Summer evenings in the country, stained glass windows, light going down, and you and she jamming your heads together over one hymn book.
Now that'll do, Hamill.
You'll see it when you're 7 fathoms deep in hell. It's an insult to the deity to pretend we're anything but tortured rebels.
Take 2 pills, Hamill. You're in a vile temper.
I'll go see to the dinner.
I fear, Master, the gut chops are very tough.
Let me see. Why did you get this meat? Who's responsible for this?
You do not hunt for buck.
I know that, you fool. I've been ill. Where did you get this execrable piece of hide?
I buy from my sister in the village. She raises goats and sells them very cheap.
This isn't fit for a leopard. You've been seeing your meat, Huma. I ought to give you a lashing.
Please, Master, I will return the money. No, Master, no, no.
Oh, he's mad.
out of this, Lance. I'm leaving. Control yourself.
No, he's been nasty and insulting since we arrived.
Well, he's not well. You can see that. He's feverish.
There is no excuse to abuse a servant. We're still supposed to be civilized men, fever or not. None of us has the right to treat the natives inhumanely. And Kuma's an exceptionally devoted houseboy.
Yes, Admiral.
Well, what did you do to Kuma?
Not that it concerns you, Lowndes, but I slapped him. He's been cheating me. I can't offer you dinner.
Well, it's just as well. I'm leaving.
I'll ride with you.
Well, you're both riding off? Oh, no, please stay. I can find food.
Thank you, no. Amol, I don't know what's the matter with you. Heretofore, I've enjoyed my Sunday visits, but not this one. You've been disagreeable and insulting ever since we arrived.
Oh, you're too touchy.
And you're rude and scant of courtesy. I thank you for your past hospitality. Come along, Spurso.
Spurso, please. Don't leave me. I'm not well.
All right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'll see you out, Lance.
I feel faint. The heat. Come right back, Doctor.
I'll certify Hummel for permanent leave. He can't stay here.
Well, as you please. Perhaps he'll have an accident.
You are angry.
Yes, really. You watch yourself. Now, Spurso, we couldn't do very well without you.
Will I see you a week from now?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Oh, he'll be different once he's well. I hope you'll reconsider.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may. If I were you, Spurso, I'd dismantle his gardens. Cheerio.
That's very good of you to stay on, Spurso.
Oh.
I'll have Kuma make up a bed for you.
How do you feel?
I feel ill. I can't sleep.
Head hot? Throat feeling mulgy?
Oh, it's pretty bad. For pity's sake, give me something to put me to sleep. Sound sleep. If it's only for 6 hours. I haven't been able to sleep for days. I can't stand it.
Mm. Poor chap.
I'm nearly mad. For a week, I've had to think and spell out every word that's come through my lips. Isn't that enough to drive a man mad? I can't see correctly. I've lost my sense of touch. My skin aches. Make me sleep.
All right. Now, look here.
Wait a minute, man. You're pinching my arm.
Oh, please, that's your neck. If you don't give me something.
What?
No, I didn't mean that. Don't be angry, Spurso. Oh, what's that? A silver case.
Yes. Containing a needle. It's a thing I hate to use. All right, hold out your arm. Now, in a few minutes, the morphine will begin to work. Lie down, men, and wait.
I think I'm beginning to go off now. Oh, it's positively heavenly. Spurso, you must give me that case to keep. You must. You must.
Not on your life. Now, my friend, sleeplessness of your kind is apt to relax the moral fiber in matters of life and death. So I shall just take the liberty of spiking your guns.
For the British in India who lived and worked in outposts of civilization, life was arduous. The unrelenting heat was debilitating. The Indians, far from Bombay and Calcutta, were primitive. Life was temporary and cheap. To the credit of the British, they worked hard to improve the life of the natives, all the while trying hard to cling to their own more civilized ways. And sometimes they cracked up. I'll return shortly with that. Live in the temperate zone, find find it hard to adjust to living under a constant blazing sun, to seasons of violent change, torrential rains, then months of scorching heat. In time, it weakens a man and muddles his mind. His moral fiber weakens. He resents his isolation and may rebel against it by being abusive to those he came out to help. That undoubtedly is what happened to Hummel, whom the jungle seems to have driven near mad.
Doctor? Spurto? Where is the man? Oh, Spurto? What the devil? After my guns, is he? What are you doing, may I ask?
Colonel, you startled me.
Well, I should hope so, you fool.
Ah, you're lucid again. That's a good sign.
Have you finished?
Yes, I have. I've taken the cartridges out of your 12-bore.
What?
I believe in taking precautions when I'm with someone suffering from delirium. Such a man is not to be trusted. Yeah. You seem better.
Well, that morphia doesn't work. Generally, I'm quick as lightning, but you clogged my feet. I was nearly caught.
You were what?
Well, a place down there. I've been afraid of it for months. It's made every night a hell for me. And yet I'm not conscious of having done anything wrong.
Look here, I'll give you another dose. We'll stop your nightmares. Tell me exactly what your trouble is.
Then will you put me to sleep, Spursto? Put me quite to sleep? If you don't, I'll be caught and die. I'll die.
Tell me.
Well, a blind face that cries and can't wipe its eyes. A blind face that chases me down corridors.
Whose face, Hummel?
Put me to sleep. You have the silver case.
Yes, right here. You must go on leave, Hummel, as soon as possible. There we are. It occurs to me that unless I drink something, I shall go out before my time. Hot tea, 3 or 4 cups. Excellent remedy against heat apoplexy.
Doctor Sahib.
Oh, Chuma.
Yes, Master.
Well, it's late. I thought you'd left or gone to bed. Did he hurt you?
He said he would lash me. I did not cheat him. My sister, I lash her for selling such old goat meat. No fresh meat. Master does not hunt for many days.
Will you prepare some tea for me, Chuma?
Yes, I make tea.
Thank you. Are you staying on?
You go in, big room. I bring the tea.
Well, he's asleep in there.
First time in long time, Doctor.
Yes. Perhaps I should have my tea on the veranda.
No. Do not go on the veranda. It's gales.
Oh. Jackals, eh? Yeah. They come around?
Oh, yes, Master. Many jackals will come.
Why do you say that?
Because those from dark places are in cottage here.
Well, perhaps you're right. But I shall have my tea in here, if I may.
Yes. Water will soon boil. You hear?
Jekylls. Can you tell me what happened to Master Jevons?
He did?
Oh, yes, I know.
Shot in head. Master say Jevons Sahib. Clean gun and it shoot him. He very good hunter.
So I understand. Who are those from the dark places, Chuma?
Evil spirits here in cottage. Maybe I go to sister in village. No one from the dark places there. Good heavens, it's almost noon. Chuma? Chuma?
Yes, Master.
Yes, it's almost midday. Why didn't you awaken me?
Doctor, say you sleep.
Why are you cowering? Are you afraid of something?
I stay, but do not lash me, master.
Lash you?
Good chops, plenty tough, sahib.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Has the doctor ridden off?
Him on veranda. Not so hot today.
Oh, that will be a blessing. Breakfast, you want?
Yes, master.
How are you, Hummel?
Good morning, Doctor. Chuma asked me not to lash him. What's that about? Do you know?
Yes. You were off the rail last night.
Oh, I don't remember.
You must have had a touch of the sun. You behaved very badly. Lowndes was unforgiving when he rode off.
Oh, I'll apologize when he's here next Sunday.
Look here, if I write you a medical certificate, will you apply for leave on the spot?
No.
Why not? You want it?
Oh, it won't be so bad now that you've shown me the way.
Morphia is an extreme measure. I can't prescribe it as a regular measure.
Oh, I can always wire you if I become desperate. Besides, now that I've got into the way of sleeping, it'll be all right.
You wouldn't trust me with your silver case, would you?
No. I feel a new man now, thanks to you, Spurster. You're returning to camp now?
Well, I must, but I'll try to look you up every other day.
Just what did I do last night, Spurster?
Oh, it's best forgotten.
No, I'd rather know.
Well, you were quarrelsome and insulting to us.
Including Chuma?
The chops were tough and you lost your temper with him and slapped him. You're fortunate he didn't leave.
I am not a cruel man, Spurster.
Well, any man can be provoked into cruelty, and you were. By that nightmare of yours, you must remember that.
Oh, I'd much rather forget it.
You should.
Daylight is an antidote, and so is morphia.
And so is sleep. Rely on a good night's sleep.
Here's your horse. Come on, now.
Well, goodbye, Hummel. And do stay indoors. The heat's beginning to build up.
Oh, heat? It's insufferable heat. What in heaven's name is that? Again. I saw it once before when I was suffering from overwork. Chuma?
Yes, master. Yes. Oh, master, you come out of sun.
See it? Look there.
Huh?
On the veranda.
There's nothing there, sahib.
Of course there is. It's a figure of myself.
You are on the veranda, sahib.
If this thing slides away from me, all in one piece, like a ghost, I'll notice only my eyes and stomach that are out of order, but if it walks, my head is going.
I make hot tea plenty quick, master.
Help me, Chuma.
Yes, we go inside, yes.
Yes, keeps moving away from me.
Please, you sit down, master. I make hot tea.
It's dissolving like swimming specks in my eyes. The thing walked away. My mind, it's going.
Master Doctor.
What are you doing here, Chuma? I'm very busy.
Oh, Master Bud, you come.
No, I can't leave the men. Everyone needs my attention.
Oh, Master, see yourself on veranda.
Oh, dear. Delirium.
He say, silver box and get well medicine.
That's out of the question, Chuma. He'd peg out.
Oh, please, Doctor, you make him well.
I can't help. I'm very sorry. Look, give him plenty of hot tea and make him lie down.
He afraid. They cut him.
Go to the apothecary. Tell him to see Master Hummel. I simply cannot leave, Chuma. Do the best you can. I'll be by on Sunday, not before.
Well, this brings us to our first break. Hey, I'm sorry, but I gotta do it. Look, I'm just gonna play some music, okay?
Resilient.
His body can endure great hardships. What sustains him is a sound, clear mind. When that slips, for whatever reason, his mind becomes his enemy. Physical pain is not as devastating as mental torment. And that is what has driven Hummel to the edge of insanity. I will return shortly with Act 3.
WJ Detroit.
Rudyard Kipling was born in Bombay in 1865. When he returned from school in England, he was 17, and his father, then curator of the museum in Lahore, got him a job as assistant editor of the Civil and Military Gazette. It was during his leisure that he began to write his stories of India. His information was firsthand. Often at night, he said, he would wander till dawn in all manner of odd places, in and about the narrow gullies under the mosque of Wazir Khan. And he met the soldiery. His stories ring true. He knew his subjects. He knew Hummel. The following Sunday, Spursto reins in his horse and...
Ah, Lord! Pull up!
Now, Mottram.
He wired that he's still stuck out in the desert. Let's pull up for a few minutes, eh? I'd like a cigarette.
Well, any word about Hummel?
No, I was unable to visit him. The coolies were too sick. I didn't think I'd see you today.
As I decided the last minute. Any change out here is welcome, even if it means holding my tongue when Hummel is abusive.
Quite right, too. Well, it's a change for a day, and it's good for our pent-up frustrations.
Oh, yes, I have plenty of those. As a doctor, you can do something for those who are ill. I'm supposed to minister to the body politic.
I tell you what, it's almost hopeless. Old Timbersides acting up again?
Well, yes, it's one miserable intrigue after another.
You know, he has absolutely no interest in improving the lot of the natives.
Will it ever change?
No.
Not in my lifetime.
I should tackle the king with a light hand, Lowndes. They'll hate you quite enough under any circumstances.
Man, it's weary work. I'd sooner be with you, Spurster.
Oh, would you? I don't think so.
Oh, really bad week?
Oh, very. But I'm happy to see you, truly.
Well, we're here, and that's reassuring. As you know, there are very many places in the East where it's not good or kind to let your acquaintances drop out of sight, even for one short week. Yeah, that's really why I decided to ride in.
Hummel may be well enough to join us. He's had a week to recover. The apothecary probably fixed him up.
Oh, yes, he's a conscientious man.
I'd say so, yes. He wanted to certify Chevin's death as suicide.
I wonder what really did happen.
Well, accidental death is a more dignified way of going out. I'm inclined to believe it's the truth. Chevin's wasn't suicidal.
No. But of course, there's another alternative. No, that's imagining. And couldn't be true.
Hello, Juma.
You come in cottage, yes?
Yes, of course.
Something wrong here, Spurster.
Where's your master, Juma?
He descended to dark places. There he was caught, not able to escape with sufficient speed.
Dead?
You come.
Yes, I'll have a look at him. He may be just asleep.
Master Hummel, there on bed.
Yes, he's dead. Poor chap.
How long, Spurster?
The body's still warm. A few hours.
Cholera?
No. He had fever and he was being ridden by a nightmare.
And it pursued him in the dark places. What kind of nonsense is that?
He was afraid to fall asleep. That's about all I can tell you, Lance. That night I spent with him, very trying, by the way. He told me that a blind face that cries and cannot wipe its eyes, a blind face chased him down corridors. I suspect that his years out here, the remorseless heat, the unrewarding work building the rail line, poor food, all of those began to affect his mind.
Yes. His mind was wandering, but
dark places? No, no, that's superstitious and ignorant.
Well, to us, it's not to the natives. You heard Chuma. He also told me that there were evil spirits in the cottage.
Oh, what rubbish.
Look at Hummel's eyes.
Good Lord. Shut his eyelids, Spester. I can see hell in those eyes. Shut them, I implore you.
Chuma.
Yes, Doctor.
When did your master go to bed?
11 or 12.
He was well then? How should you know?
No, he was not ill. He did not sleep for 3 nights. This I know. I see him walking much very late in the night.
What do you think, Chuma?
He descended into dark places. He not able to escape with sufficient speed.
Go out and prepare the seals to be set on the Sahib's property.
I tell other servants to stay away until you reckon tale of Sahib's property. They are all thieves and they would steal.
Oh, what did he die of, Spurser?
As far as I can make out, he died from, anything. Stoppage of the heart's action. Heat apoplexy. Or some other visitation.
Well, he certainly was scared to death. Look at those eyes. I cover up the face.
Is there any fear on earth that can turn a man into that likeness? It is ghastly.
Please, Spursto, cover it up.
No fear on earth. Well, it'll take a half a day to knock together any sort of coffin. Tell the coolies to break ground next to Jevin's grave.
Yes, I'll see to it at once.
I have set seals on Master's property.
Ah, good man, Chuma, thank you.
Evil spirits, Sahib, have been in cottage. They have gone now.
From which I infer that they have made their way into Hummel and will be buried with him.
Do you want tea and food, Doctor? You have come long way.
Tea, yes, please. No food. I have no appetite, Chuma. What happens to you?
Maybe Sahib, who takes Master's place, he will keep me on. Otherwise, I return to my sister in the village. Excuse, please. What is that?
Hey? Oh, this, a camera.
Yes, it is black box.
Yes, it takes pictures.
I go to boil water for tea. I think you should go veranda. I serve you there.
I really wonder, could I capture that on film?
Spencer?
Right here, on the veranda.
I say you've got Chuma stirred up. That black box of yours, what is it? You know how the natives feel about pictures.
Yes, of course. The camera's an instrument of the devil. It imprisons their faces on film and captures their souls.
Yes, well, I respect that.
Oh, so do I. What's this got to do with the picture I might take of the late Hummel?
Well, there's something grisly about it, for one thing, and, Chuma's afraid that the picture would capture the evil ones. And I just don't like it.
It isn't in medical science.
What isn't?
Things in a dead man's eyes. You saw them.
Oh, for goodness sake, leave that horror alone. I've seen a native die of pure fright when a tiger chivied him. I think you know what killed Hummel.
Indeed. Well, I'm going to try to see.
Tea and a biscuit and some sliced meat, Sahib.
Excellent. Thank you, Chuma.
And the doctor?
He'll be here directly.
He is with the master. He has black box.
Good Lord. That's Hummel's voice. But Hummel's dead. Spursto!
I'm all right.
Yes. I heard.
Yes.
You took a picture.
Oh, it was impossible, of course.
What will it look like?
I destroyed the film. There was nothing to photograph.
And you smashed the camera.
I didn't. We'd better better leave, Lowndes. Go back to work. I've written the death certificate.
Yes, I have my horse.
Yes, we can pick them up when we come back for the burial. We'll leave them at the station.
Did you take a picture?
I told you it was impossible.
That's a lie. Just what did happen? I distinctly heard Hummel shriek as if he were being burned in hell.
I really don't remember any part of it.
I don't believe you.
My dear fellow, let's forget it, shall we? We're in such a state now that we'd believe anything.
Was it Jevons?
I beg your pardon?
Do you believe that Jevons died accidentally? Or was it suicide?
Well, we have Hummel's report about that. Jevons fumbled the trigger on his gun.
There is an alternative, isn't there?
I never realized that you have such a vivid imagination.
No, I'm just trying to be rational. Well,
without evidence, I haven't the vaguest idea.
What do you infer?
Let me answer it this way, Lowndes. And I'm not being facetious. There may be heaven, there must be hell. Meanwhile, there is our life here.
Lowndes had made up his mind. The death of the job contractor, Jevons, broke Hummel's spirit and mind because Hummel murdered him. But did he? Death was certified as accidental. Was it? No one will ever know. And Kipling leaves it up to us to reach our own conclusion. The one fact we have is that Hummel's deterioration followed soon after Jevons died. That preyed on Hummel's mind. He couldn't sleep. He was pursued by a thing with a blind face. And it caught up with him. I'll be back shortly. Did Dr. Spurstow experience when he took that picture of Hummel's eyes? Did an ectoplasmic Hummel reach out from the image on the negative? Is that why there was that thrashing about noise? Your guess is as good as mine. Is it all improbable? The painter Matisse once showed a picture to a visitor who said, "I've never seen a woman like that." To which he replied, "It isn't a woman, madam. It's a picture." If a painter is permitted certain distortions, why not the writer of fiction? Our cast included John Beale, Court Benson, and Earl Hammond. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Rounding off this segment, I have for you a short story called Flame Down, written by a science fiction writer named Torrance Brown Fife. Most of his works are long out of print, but some here and there are available through Gutenberg or through the LibriVox Project. This is from the LibriVox Project. It was originally published in Analog Science Fiction and Science Fact for August of 1961.
Flame Down. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This reading is by Yuan Ji. Flame Down by H.B. Fife. Charlie Holmes lost touch with reality amid rending and shattering sounds that lingered dimly. Blackness engulfed him in a wave of agony. He was not sure exactly when the possibility of opening his eyes occurred to him. Vaguely, he could sense, remember was too definite, much tugging and hauling upon his supine body. It doubtless seemed justifiable, but he flinched from recalling more clearly that which must have been so extremely unpleasant. Gently now, he tried rolling his head a few inches right, then left. When it hurt only one-tenth as much as he feared, he let his eyes open. Hello, rasped the bulbous creature squatting beside his pallet. Charlie shut his eyes quickly and very tightly. Something with a dampish, spongy tip, probably one of the grape-red tentacles he had glimpsed, prodded his shoulder. Hello, insisted the scratchy voice. Charlie peeped wearily, was strapped at it, and opened his eyes resignedly. "Where the hell am I?" he inquired. It sounded very trite, even in his confused condition. Sections of the dark red skin before him, especially on the barrel-shaped belly, quivered as he spoke. "Surely," grated the remarkable voice, "you remember something." "The crash!" gasped Charlie, sitting up abruptly. He held his breath, awaiting the knifing pain it seemed natural to expect. When he felt none, he cautiously fingered his ribs, and then a horrid thought prompted him to wiggle his bare toes. Everything seemed to be in place. He lay in a small room on a thin pallet of furs. Floor and walls of slick ochre clay reflected the bright outside light pouring through a wide doorway. "What's all the sand?" he demanded, squinting at the heat waves outside. "You do not recognize it? Look again, Earthman." Earthman, thought Charlie. It must be real. I can still see him. What a whack on the head I must have got. "You are in pain?" asked the creature solicitously. "Oh, no, just... I can't remember the crash, and then..." "Ah, yes, you have not been conscious for some time." His reddish host rippled upward to stand more or less erect upon three thick tentacles. "Even with us, memory is slow after shock, and you may be uneasy in the light of gravity." "Light gravity?" reflected Charlie. "This can only mean Mars. Sure, that must be it. I was piloting a rocket and cracked up somewhere on Mars." It felt right to him. He decided that the rest of his memory would return. "Are you able to rise?" asked the other, extending a helpful tentacle. The Earthman managed to haul himself stiffly to his feet. "Say, my name is Holmes," he introduced himself dizzily. "I am Kotecki. In your language, learned here since from other spacemen, I might say, fiery canal man." "Has to be Mars," muttered Charlie under his breath. "What a bump! When can you show me what's left of my ship?" "There will be no time," answered the Martian. Bunches of small muscles twitched here and there across the front of his round, pudgy head. Charlie was getting used to the single eye, half the size of an orange and not much duller. With imagination, the various lumps and organs surrounding it might be considered a face. "The priestesses will lead the crowd here," predicted Ko. "They know I took an Earthman, and I fear that they are finished with the others."
"Finished with what?" demanded the Earthman, shaking his head in hopes of clearing it enough to figure out what was wrong.
"It has been an extremely dry season."
Ko rippled his tentacles and moved listlessly to the doorway, assuming a grotesque, furtive posture as he peered out.
"The people are maddened by the drought. They will be aroused to sacrifice you to the canal gods, like the others who survived."
"Canal gods?" croaked Charlie. "This can't be right. Aren't you civilized here? I can't be the only Earthman they've seen."
"It is true that Earthmen are perfectly safe at most times.
But the laws, the Earth Council..."
Ko snapped the tip of a tentacle at him.
"The canals are low. You can feel the heat and dryness for yourself. The crowds are inflamed by temple prophecies. And then your ship flaming down from the skies."
He snapped all his tentacle tips at once. From somewhere outside, a threatening murmur became audible. It was an unholy blend of rasping shouts and shriller chanting, punctuated by notes of a brassy gong. As Charlie listened, the volume rose noticeably. Ko reached out with one tentacle and wrapped 6 inches about the Earthman's wrist. When he plunged through the doorway, Charlie perforce went right with him. Whipping around a corner of the hut, he had time for a quick squint at the chanters. Ko alone had looked weirdly alien. 200 like him. led by a dozen bulgy figures in streaming robes, masked and decorated in brass. The natives were swarming over the sand towards the fugitives. They had evidently been busy. Above a distant cluster of low buildings, a column of smoke spiraled upward suggestively. Ko led the way at a floating gallop over a sandstone ridge and down a long slope toward what looked like the junction of two gullies.
"The canal," he wheezed. "With luck, we may find a boat."
A frenzied screech went up as the mob topped the ridge and regained sight of them. Charlie, having all he could do to breathe in the thin air, tried to shake his wrist loose. Now that they were descending the slope, he saw where the water was. They slid down a 4-foot drop in a cloud of fine, choking dust and were faced by several punt-like craft stranded in the mudflat beyond. The water was 50 feet further.
"We should have gone downstream," said Ko. "But we can wade."
Their momentum carried them several steps into the mud before Charlie realized how wrong that was. Then, as they floundered about to regain the solid bank, it became apparent that they would never reach it in time.
"They are catching us," rasped Ko.
The howling crowd was scarcely 100 yards away. The heat waves shimmered above the reddish desert sand until the Martians were blurred before Charlie's burning eyes. His feet churned the clinging mud, and he felt as if he were running in a dream.
"I'm sorry you're in it, too," he panted. "It does not matter. I act as I must."
The Earthman rubbed sweat from his eyes with the back of a muddy hand. "Everything is wrong," he mumbled. "I still can't remember cracking up the ship. Why did I always want to be a rocket pilot? Well, I made my bed." The oncoming figures wavered and blurred in the heat. Ko emitted a grating sound reminiscent of an earthly chuckle.
"As do all you mortals who finally have to lie in them," he rasped. "I will tell you now, since I can carry this episode little farther. You have never piloted a spaceship."
Charlie gaped at him incredulously.
You, what about the wreck?" "It was a truck that hit you, Charles Holmes. You have no more sense than to be crossing the street with your nose in a magazine just purchased on the corner."
With some dulled, creeping, semi-detached facet of his mind, Charlie noted that the running figures still floated above the sand without actually drawing near.
Do you mean I'm d-" "Of course you are," grated Ko amiably. "And in view of certain actions during your life, there will be quite a period of, shall we say, probation. When I was assigned to you, your reading habits suggested an amusing series of variations. You cannot know how dull it is to keep frustrating the same old dreams." "Amusing?" repeated Charlie, beyond caring about the whimper in his tone. The mob was dissolving into thin smoke and the horizon was shrinking.
Ko himself was altering into something redder of skin, but equipped with a normal number of limbs, discounting the barbed tail. The constant heat of the desert began at last to seem explicable.
"For me a great amusement," grinned Ko, displaying hideous tusks. "Next time, I'll be a Venusian. You will lose again. Then we can visit other planets and stars. Oh, well, we shall see a lot of each other."
He cheerfully polished one horn with a clawed finger.
"You won't enjoy it," he promised.
End of Flame Down by H.B. Fife.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call The Wrong Word. A rich industrialist named Wade paid a genealogist a huge sum of money to trace his family history and invited me to inspect the results. According to the genealogist, Wade was the descendant of an English earl. The genealogist showed a letter which included the quote, "Due to kaleidoscopic events taking place in the colonies, I intend to leave England and join the forces of Washington and Liberty. The letter was dated 1777. I told Wade his family historian was a quack. In a moment, I'll tell you why.
Now, here's a likely customer, a housewife, if there ever was one. Excuse me, madam, would you like to try Gunge Margarine?
Oh, yes, don't mind if I do.
And now, would you try Brand X?
Yes, please. Ugh.
Would you like to know what Brand X was?
I certainly would.
Well, it was pigeon droppings.
In the case of the wrong word, the expression kaleidoscopic events was used. The letter was dated 1777. It so happens the kaleidoscope was not invented until 1817, so the letter and the genealogist were fake.
Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
In the 1950s, there was a lot of concern about nuclear war. Duck and cover. I remember that. Being taught in the third, fourth grade to duck down and go to cover under my classroom desk, of all things. I remember even at the time thinking, I don't think this is going to help much. This episode of Escape from May the 17th of 1953 is really all about nuclear war on Earth, even though it is transported to another, absolutely, completely not Earth, post-apocalyptic planet.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
A planet of desolation and utter ruin, awaiting the return of your comrades to carry you to safety, while the remains of life about you, crawling and evil, are slowly hemming you in and ruthlessly tracking you down to your death.
Listen now as Escape brings you Charles Smith's unusual story, North of Polaris.
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4. You read me, Joe?
Loud and clear. R5S5. All ready, sir.
How is he?
Well,
how do you feel, Mac?
Scared, sir.
Now take your time out there. Be very sure.
Shh. Quiet.
Can you see him?
Not yet, sir. Yes, sir, there he is.
Mac, what's it like out there?
Nothing much to see.
You feel heavier or lighter than usual? Can you move about easily?
Just like at home.
What about atmosphere?
I'm turning off my oxygen unit and opening the intake valve.
Careful. Not too fast now.
I've cut my supply completely, sir.
Rescue party standing by, sir.
It seems to be okay. Yes, sir, the air is good.
Are you sure?
It's okay. Send them out.
From the port of the spaceship, we could see him calmly walking about on the surface of a planet approximately 20 million miles from our own. All 40 of us had drawn straws.
Mac had won. And if we returned home safely, he would be remembered as the first man to touch the soil of an alien planet.
Well, Joe?
Well, I guess I'm as ready as I'll ever be, sir.
Who else are you taking with you?
Stoner. He's good with the camera. Sam, have you got your gear ready?
Joe, all set for the fix.
All right.
Now, you know what to do. What I want.
Yes, sir.
Map the area as best you can. Bring me a report on water sources, mineral deposits, vegetation. And if you see any signs of life, try to get pictures. But otherwise, avoid it. You can tell the others that's an order.
Yes, sir. Do you think there is life here, sir?
Well, some of our best minds have always claimed there was.
Well, when we get back, we'll set them straight, sir.
Yeah. I'll make her the drops and pick you up at this spot in 48 hours. So you're on your own. Good luck, Joe.
Thank you, sir.
Do you notice anything wrong with this place?
What do you mean, Mac?
Well, look around. You see any trees, bushes, grass, anything growing? See anything green?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's probably desert country.
No, look here. You feel the soil.
What?
It's rich enough. Gets plenty of sun, probably plenty of rain. Look at its color. Gray, dead.
Maybe it's like the moon. Maybe this is just another moon.
No, there's air here. There isn't any on the moon.
How you know? You ever been there?
Well, that's what they say, Sam.
Sometimes they're wrong. Well, what now?
Well, we got about 5 hours of daylight left. We'll head north.
I don't like it. It's too quiet. Not even the wind.
What are you trying to do, Mac? Don't you think we're jumpy enough?
How long are they going to leave us here?
48 hours.
That could be a long time.
We started north. It was easy walking over the flat rolling land, easy because there were no trees or bushes or weeds. There was nothing. Nothing but the gray sky and the gray dead soil. I was beginning to think that maybe it was only a moon. And then we made camp for the night.
Okay, come and get it.
Well, look at here. Beans and K-rations. Just what I wanted.
Oh.
Now, watch your skins, they're hot.
Now you tell me.
You know the first thing I'm going to do when I get home?
Oh, what?
I'm going in the best restaurant in town and order the biggest steak in the joint.
You're pretty sure you're going to get home, aren't you?
Sure, I'm sure.
Why, aren't you, Mac?
I don't know. Hey, want some coffee, Joe?
Yeah, thanks. You married, Mac?
Uh-huh.
Any kids?
Yeah, one, a little girl. She's 5.
Yeah. What made you volunteer for this trip?
I don't know. Maybe I just had to. You understand that?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, you know what I miss? The crickets. You know, at home you sit around a campfire, like at the lake. You hear the frogs and crickets.
And slap the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Oh, what's that?
Well, here we are, 20 million miles away from our home. 20 million miles. And yet up there in the sky, we can still see it.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody's looking at this stinking planet and wondering if we made it.
Oh, sure they are. All the scientists, astronomers.
I don't mean them, I mean...
I know what you mean.
You got a family, Sam?
Only my mother, she lives... This?
Hmm?
What is it? Something's out there. Moving.
It was life. There was life here. And we can see it now. In and the dim light given up by our heating unit. It was an ugly, four-legged beast with a hairless body. And from its odor, a scavenger. Like everything else here, it was the color of gray.
Well, that's real smart. You're supposed to be a photographer. Take pictures of what we
find. Oh, lay off him, Joe. It was only a rat, a big rat.
The day broke clean and bright, and we kept walking north doing the job we'd set out to do. And there were no other signs of life, and we'd almost convinced ourselves that the rat had been a stowaway from our ship. For the first time, things felt right.
Hey, Joe!
What?
Hold it!
Stop wasting that film.
What's the matter? Don't you want your picture in the magazine? I've shot everything there is. You shoot here, it's all going to look the same.
Nothing.
Yeah, I know.
When we turn back?
Tomorrow morning. There. Now let's take a look around.
What's the use? There's nothing to see. Hey, why don't we start back now? Joe? Joe?
Mac? Come up here.
What is it?
On the double. Now take a look through these binoculars, Sam. Off to the east there. What do you see?
A lake. Yeah, maybe an ocean.
Now swing around slowly to your left. No, easy. There. What do you make of that?
I don't know.
Well, it's looks like clumps of stone or cement. Take a look. Give him the glasses, Sam.
Hey, could that be what's left of the city?
If it is. If we found...
Sam,
you fool, come back here! But he wasn't coming back. Not now. He'd found the subject for his camera, and he was racing toward it. At the edge of the sprawling stone ruins, we caught up. And he made us turn with our backs to the city and pointed his camera at us.
Welcome to the city. Hold it, both of you, right there.
I should have shaved.
Hey, Mac, pick up a piece of that stone.
I like this.
Okay. Come on, what are you waiting for?
Hold it. Mac, put that stone down.
Hey, you think...
Just put it down.
What's the matter with you guys?
Geiger counter's acting up.
Are you kidding? What could be radioactive around here?
Mac, lower it near the ground.
Well, what do you know?
Radioactive. What is it, uranium, pitch blood, what?
No. Now, this isn't a natural composition.
Yeah, then what?
Look around you. Take a good look. What's it look like?
Just stone, cement, ruins. What else?
Look at the color of it. The edges.
Yeah. Like it's been burnt. Scorched. Remember what our cities looked like?
They wouldn't know about atomic energy here.
What makes you so sure? I led them on into the sprawling corpse of the great metropolis. Till we stood near the jagged base of what once must have been a magnificent building.
Mac?
Huh?
Over there.
What?
Look. Rats.
Yeah, scrounging for food.
Well, they sure did.
With each step we'd taken, the radiation had increased. And when it reached the danger point, we turned and started slowly back. We didn't say anything. We didn't need to. We had seen and we knew that this world, this civilization, had committed suicide.
It's getting late. We'd better make camp.
Well, this is as good a place as any, I guess.
Oh. I don't know about you guys, but I'm pooped.
Yeah, it's been a long day. You want to set up the stove, Mac?
Yeah, might as well.
The sky's clouding up in the south. Looks like a storm brewing.
Your film's safe, Sam. You think the radiation back there damaged it?
Nah, it's packed in heavy lead foil.
Yeah.
Cigarette, Joe?
Yeah, thanks.
It's funny.
No, what's that?
Take a look out there. No, south, I mean. It's not the sky that's clouding up. It looks like dust. Dust storm.
It couldn't be. There's no wind.
Take a look.
Yeah, but there's no wind.
Well, something's out there kicking up the dust. How far away you figure?
It's hard to tell. 10, maybe 15 miles.
Joe, look!
What?
Hey, that's to the right about a mile. You see him?
See what?
No, over to your left.
Well, what is it?
People.
You're crazy. There's nothing out
there. Two of them, they fell. I can't see them now either, but I did see them.
There, now they're up again. Joe's right. The people, like us.
Hey! Oh, hey!
All right,
stop. Hey, Joe.
Look, we've got orders to avoid contact with life here.
But, Joe, they're people, human beings.
You don't know what they are. Just because they resemble us physically, that doesn't mean a thing.
But, Joe,
we've got our orders. The ground's higher over there. Let's move over there where we can see them better. Come on. When we made it to the rise, we could see a man and a woman. Two people just like ourselves. Even what was left of their clothing was similar to ours. And they were running desperately. And then I looked beyond them and saw the cause of their fear. Stalking them, slowly closing the distance between them, were six of those great evil rats. Stood there silently, watching the hunters and the hunted. And the longer we watched, the more it became certain that the rats could end the hunt whenever they wanted to. I could see their features now. The woman was much younger than the man. Their faces were distorted by panic and fear. And we watched and waited. And then the old man fell, and Sam and Mac were running, screaming, driving off the rats. Are you all right? Can you understand me?
Yes. Where's my father? I must go back to him.
The boys are with him. It's all right. You speak our language.
Yes. But we were sure there wasn't anyone else in this sector. We thought they'd all gone.
Gone where?
South. They left us behind. They said he was too old, not worth trouble.
How many of you lived here?
11 of us.
Only 11?
My father and I started out yesterday morning. We thought we could meet them later. And then the rats were... Where are you from?
Outside.
Then there is something left outside.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I was sure. I'd hoped. I knew it couldn't end here.
Come on, we'd better get you back to camp now. Sleep. Gave them a sedative. She'll be all right, but I'm worried about the old man.
Hey, Joe?
Yeah.
We've been talking. How can they know our language? How?
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's like our world, isn't it? After the atomic war, I mean.
Yeah. I remember reading how the radioactive dust spread all over the land, killing everything. Grass, trees, animals, everything. I guess the same thing happened here.
You off your rocket, Joe, with 20 million miles apart. And our world was over 50 years ago.
Look, don't you think it's possible that life on another planet could have started, advanced, and progressed step by step with ours?
Oh, Joe, now you're talking like something out of one of those science fiction magazines.
Well, what's the matter? Can't your ego accept it? Do we have to be the greatest, the super beings? Everything else in the universe is subhuman?
Oh, wait a minute, Joe.
Knock it off.
suit this back.
Okay. It might be a good idea if one of us stood watch while the other two slept. How about it, huh?
Sure.
Well, I'll take the first lap, and then you, Sam, and then Mac. Each of us will do 3 hours, huh? And I'll try to get some sleep. The 3 hours passed quickly. My mind was racing, asking if this world was a parallel to our own world. Were all the worlds of the universe alike? I was trying to find the answer when Sam relieved me, and I still hadn't found it when I dropped off to sleep. But I didn't sleep very long.
Sam! Sam!
Oh, good Lord, Clarence, he must have dozed off. Come on!
Just as the sun rose full above the horizon. And then as we turned to walk back to camp, we saw it. The sky to the south was black with dust. It was closer now, much closer than the day before. And whatever it was out there was moving straight for us.
What do you make of it, Joe?
I don't know. Oh, Jean.
Yes?
Does your father feel well enough to travel?
Oh, he's much better. He wants to talk to you.
All right.
Joe, how far are we from our rendezvous point?
Oh, about 12 miles.
Have you noticed the dust to the south?
Yes. I was hoping that you could tell us what it was, sir.
It is the army.
The what?
The army. The great army of the rats. The others, those you saw yesterday and this morning, they were the scouts. Out there is the main force.
Well, why only rats? Why no other animals?
When the war started, the rats were already immune to radiation. They thrived on it. When all other life perished.
But why?
We did it. We made them immune. We used them in our early atomic experiments, generation after generation. And generation by generation, their resistance increased until a rat was born who was immune to radiation.
What are we waiting for? Let's get out of here.
Yes, we must run. And now they are the masters, the rulers, and we are the scavengers.
Well, if you can't keep up,
hold it. All right, hold up.
Oh, there's no use going on. Look there ahead of us.
Yeah, dust. More of them.
Behind us. To the north.
Yeah, they've cut us off.
Now they close in for the kill. I told you it was an efficient army. Their strategy is well planned. They've a good general. As good a man as myself.
Father, please try
to... Oh, now, these young men need me, Jean. We're outnumbered. We need time to muster our forces. Perhaps we could make a truce with the rats.
Talk sense, will you?
Gentlemen, be reasonable. We have no other choice. You see how easily they outmaneuvered us? A truce is our only hope.
Make him shut up!
You come over there. Come
over there. Joe, he's crazy. He talks crazy. Don't let it get you.
How much time we got left before they pick us up?
7 hours.
We'll never make it.
Jean.
Yes?
Do you know this sector?
Yes.
Well, come with me, please. Mac, keep an eye on the old man. I didn't know what I was looking for or what I expected to find, but I had to do something. Even walking aimlessly over the scorched stone rubble was better than standing, waiting for the circle of rats to close in. And then Gene found it, an entrance to an underground bomb shelter, one just large enough to hold the average family. We raced back to where we'd left the others. And now we can hear the rats, thousands of them all around us.
Joe, I tried to stop him. He wouldn't listen. He was like crazy.
What are you doing?
I couldn't help it. Believe me, I couldn't help it.
He was about 200 yards away, his shoulders back, his head held high, walking directly toward the rats. And in his right hand, he was holding a small white handkerchief, waving it back and forth like a flag of truce. He kept on until they formed a semicircle around it. And then he stopped. And all around us, the rats stopped. For a moment, I swear, he spoke to them. And then he turned toward us, raised his hand in salute. And then the rats swarmed all over him.
Come on!
No, come on! Come on, Gene, you can't help me!
Come on!
We burrowed ourselves in the shelter. In a few moments, we could hear them overhead, hurtling themselves against the heavy, lead-lined door, their yellow teeth digging at the concrete and steel. But it had been built to stand an atomic blast. It held off the rats. And we waited. For one thing, how long could we stay alive in that coffin? We didn't speak. We just sat there, wondering when they'd break through. Joe?
Yeah.
What's the use?
Let's get it over.
No. No, they'll give up. They're starving. They'll leave to find some other food.
Joe, the rats, they're quitting, they're leaving.
Maybe they are. Maybe they just want us to think they are.
No. No, they're leaving. I'm going to take a look.
Mac, don't open that door.
Joe, they're... Now, listen. Listen, it's a ship. Clark and the ship. Come on, Joe, let's get out of here. Open it and see us. Hey! Hey! Down here!
Hey! Well, Gene, we can go out now. They've gone.
What?
It's all over. We're safe now. We can go out.
Out? Out? Oh, I can't believe it.
We're going to take you back with us. Away from this. Now, come on.
No, please. Please, I'm afraid.
Afraid?
Don't you hear it? That noise?
Well, that's our ship. Here, I'll show you. Look, you see the landing?
The ship? I don't understand.
But the one that brought us here.
Brought you here?
Yes.
Well, where did it come from? Europe? Asia? Where?
Europe? Asia?
Oh, I knew we hadn't destroyed all of the Earth.
Earth? Is that what you call this planet? Earth?
This is the Earth. You. Where are you from?
What? Way up there. Just north of Polaris.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you North of Polaris by Charles Smith, starring William Conrad as Joe, with High Averback as Mac, and Eddie Firestone as Sam. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, Ralph Moody, and Frank Gerstel. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
I feel like a new man. It's a lovely day today.
I thought you had flu.
I took a grandpa headache powder, and I'm well better.
When colds and flu are about, grandpa headache powders are what you need. Grandpa headache powders work fast because they dissolve almost immediately. Grandpa makes all those dreadful flu symptoms disappear quickly. So, whenever you're in pain, get fast relief. Get grandpa headache powder.
Ah, grandpa.
The Devil and Mr. O was a 1970s revival of radio drama. More of a recapitulation than a revival, as these plays were originally broadcast on the 1930s Lights Out. Some of the plays have revised titles, such as Alley Cat or Cat Wife. This mostly came about because by the 1970s, Arch Obler, quite frankly, needed the money. Even though you would have to say that this practice of rerunning and rebranding his programs muddied the waters for those of us who are interested in developing some kind of historical timeline or events in old-time radio.
Lights Out for The Devil and Mr. O. It is later than you think. Turn out your lights now. We bring you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly so that if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now. This is Mr. O. Arch Obler. Have you ever wanted to turn time backwards to a pleasanter era, back to the days long before ticking atom bombs and air pollution and the inbred madness of our cities? Well, our story begins after a word from your announcer.
Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Hello, this is your host, welcoming you through the squeaking door. Not for a half hour of terror, but to tell you about Radio Nostalgia Magazine. Radio Nostalgia Magazine is a must for old-time radio fans. It's the magazine with many photos and stories of old-time radio and its stars. Our current issue features a 16-page article on The Shadow. All subscribers will get a free Captain Midnight decoder badge, a Captain Midnight Flight Patrol membership, and a Flight Commander certificate from the Secret Squadron. To get your copy, send $1.50 in check or money order to Radio Nostalgia, Box 8007R, Union City, New Jersey, 07087. That's Radio Nostalgia, Box 8007R, Union City, New Jersey, zip 07087. Send now and get a free 8x10 photo of the Lone Ranger and Tonto, boys and girls.
So this is Mr. O again. You know, the wonder of radio is that it all takes place in the theater of your own mind. All I can do as the playwright and director is to write the words and indicate the sound effects and get actors to speak, and then it all comes to life in your very own mind. Now picture this in your mind. We're in the Dordogne region in France. Beside a road shimmering in the heat of the midday sun stands a large, dusty limousine. The lid to the engine is open, and a begrimed little Frenchman tinkers with the mechanism. Within the car sits an Englishwoman, Kay Stanton, my name. And next to her is Jim Brent, an American, a member of our own State Department's diplomatic corps. By the way, if you haven't turned out your lights yet, turn them out now and listen to Neanderthal.
Anti-what,
Michelle? Aren't you clever with engines?
I think I will rest a moment and talk with you. Oh, this sun. It is doing its best to fry the little brains I have left.
Poor dear. Come on, get in. Jeffrey was worried about your ability to fix the engine.
Ah, most comfortable. You should try working with your hands, my dear Jeffrey. It gives one a most exquisite appreciation of the comforts of upholstered seats.
Sorry I'm such a dud at machinery.
No, Jeffrey, don't be so stuffy. Claude's much too primeval in his ways to be subtle. If he thought you ought to help fix the engine, he'd be shouting the fact at the top of his voice.
Not at the top, my dear, but perhaps in the middle register. Oui, Kay, as usual, you are right. I lack all knowledge of the diplomatic art. If I do not like what a man is doing, I'm forced to say so abruptly and completely. What an advantage you men of the diplomatic service have over we other poor mortals, my dear Jeffrey.
Sorry, but I'm much too warm at the moment to think you're very funny.
Oh, you too. The minute you get together, the great battle of words begins. Aggressiveness versus diplomacy. The financier versus the diplomat. As the Americans say, bury the hatchet, my friend.
I'm afraid Monsieur Wallace will never appreciate my virtues. He likes men who sit around green tables and talk. I, on the other hand, do not like sitting. I do.
The diplomatic way of getting things done is the only civilized way.
And again, monsieur, I must beg to disagree. There comes a time when if a thing is to be done, one must do it. In diplomacy, how do you say it, be hanged?
The philosophy of ruthlessness. Caveman philosophy.
What do we know of cavemen?
I know that a ruthless aggressiveness may reap temporary rewards, but those rewards that have come in a far greater and more permanent form have resulted from the use of a civilized code. A friendly exchange. Calm consideration of facts. The ethical way of life.
The ethical way of life. I tell you this.
All right, gentlemen. There's just about enough of that for one day.
So sorry.
A thousand pardons, my dear Kay.
Are you certain it will run, Renner?
In my simplicity, I know but one way to find out. And that is to try and start it. Voila.
Clever Claude, isn't he, Jeffrey?
Let's hope it continues to run.
Oh, charming thought. Let's be on our way, Claude, before we fall apart.
They sit and bump.
We're very late, Claude, so speed's the word.
Right. The sooner we get out of this country, the better I like it.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I don't like this place. It gives me the chills.
With the sun doing its best to parboil us, what are you talking about?
I'm not talking of temperatures. I'm talking of atmosphere. These forests and hills. Whenever I travel through here, I feel as if I were passing through a place old beyond decay.
But that is amazing.
What do you mean?
Because what you see of this country we are passing through, you speak profound truth.
Truth?
We are at Le Moustier.
Le Moustier?
Oui. Does that mean nothing to you?
Nothing.
Not to me either.
Le Moustier, the Mysterian period. The dawn of mankind. The Neanderthal man.
You mean here?
Oui. Here. In this country which you say is old beyond decay, were founded Neanderthaloid skeletons. What do you call cavemen? Men from the dawn of man's antiquity.
Claude, are you serious?
Some of the finest specimens of Neanderthaloid skeletons have been discovered in the caves right in this region.
Really?
It is unfortunate we are in such a hurry, or we could stop, perhaps, and see a few of the caves where the excavation have been made by the anthropologists.
We haven't time for that sort of thing.
I said as much.
Claude.
So I was saying, the anthropologists have found the most wonderful remains of this early species of man, who are said to be the source of the horrible ogres in our fairy tales.
What are you talking about?
Silly nonsense.
Yes, Claude. How could anyone possibly know after 50,000 years what this Neanderthal caveman looked like?
But that is simple. From the peculiarities of the skeletons that have been found, it is simple to reconstruct the physical appearance of the race.
Really?
I remember hearing the hands and feet were very large, The thigh bones curved so that the men walked like apes. Teeth and jaws were large. Enormous brow ridges resulting in a fierce, horrible expression.
How nice.
On and on.
They were men and not men. Horrible characters.
Hey, would you mind telling your erudite friend to step on the accelerator? We've got to be at Monet within 2 hours. We'll never get there at the pace he's driving.
And Kay, would you tell your impatient compatriot that I drive as fast and in a manner that pleases me alone? Would you tell him that?
Claude, look out. The road's blocked.
Don't swing your wheel, you fool. The
cliff. Yes, something is wrong. I can't.
The cliff!
Kay!
Jeffrey, please open your eyes. Jeffrey, please open your eyes. I'm so frightened. I don't know what...
Kay.
Oh, well, thank God you're all right.
You're all right?
Oh, yes, I'm all right, but Claude, I don't know where he is.
The cliff. We went over.
We were thrown clear, I guess. The car's over there. See it all broken up. But Claude, I can't see him.
Yeah, help me up.
Oh, what is it, Jeffrey?
Oh, my arm. It's broken, I guess.
Oh, Jeffrey.
Oh, I'll be all right. Lucky to be alive.
I don't understand going over that horrible cliff. And Claude...
Back here. In the brush.
Oh, come ahead. Well, what's the matter? Are you hurt?
My knee. Kay, are you all right?
Oh, yes, Claire. All right, stay where you are. We'll come to you. We'll come to you. Don't move.
Oh.
Sorry, God. Got to get that knee bandaged.
It is all right. A little pain is better than oblivion.
Oh, sorry, I can't be of any help, old man. It's a blasted arm of mine.
It is all right, my friend. Kay is doing excellently.
How cold it is.
That wind.
Freezing.
But how could that be in the middle of July?
Claude, Jeffrey, what is this? The car goes over a cliff. We don't die. A warm, sunny day, and now suddenly it's like winter. What is this? Tell me, what is this?
Steady.
There must be some logical explanation. I know this country, like you say, like the back of my hand. There is never such cold winds here in July. I tell you... Oh.
Claude, you shouldn't try to get help.
I'm all right.
Oh, we've got to get help somehow.
No. No. All I want now is a cigarette.
No, I haven't any. Oh, there's some in the side pocket of the car. I'll get them.
No, Jeffrey, I'll get them.
But you
can't go through the bushes with that arm of yours. I'm all right. I'll be right back.
Kay,
wait.
No, I'll be back in a minute.
This infernal knee.
Better sit quietly.
Quietly. It is not in my nature to be quiet. A stick. Get me a stick. I'm not going to lie here the rest of my life. Get me a stick for a crutch and I...
Wait a minute.
But I tell you...
Wait, I tell you. There's someone coming.
Kay?
No, the other direction.
But I do not see.
There, over there to the right. There, don't you see? The bushes are being pushed back.
Yes, I see. Some peasant will give us assistance. Now everything will be all right.
Of course. Oh, there we are. He's in the clearing. Now he...
Oh. Who is that?
Oh, no.
Claude? Who? Am I mad? This cannot be.
He's looking at me.
Gone.
Yes. But who?
Who? You do not understand?
Understand what? Talk up.
Did you not see him as I saw him? The short, hairy, twisted body, the head thrust forward, the neck bent like an ape, those enormous brow ridges, the broad, flat nose,
you did not recognize.
Well.
Once, in your own British Museum, I saw a reproduction of a man like that.
Huh?
But never did I think that I would see him in life.
I tell you, speak. Who was he? Who?
A man of the caves. A Neanderthal.
Are you insane? Why, the race is extinct 50,000 years.
I tell you only what I saw, what I know.
And I tell you you're mad.
But you saw as I did.
No.
The thick, hairy body. The short, ape-like limb. That misshapen face like something out of a nightmare. Yes. A nightmare of 50,000 years ago. A caveman comes out of the past.
No, stop talking like that. It can't be, I tell you, it can't be. He's some madman wandering these forests, that's all. Why, cavemen died here 50,000 years ago. The past doesn't come back, I tell you, it doesn't. Why, Claude.
Eh?
Kay.
Oh.
Kay.
Kay, where are you?
And now a word from your announcer before we return to the excitement of Neanderthal.
Mr. President, what does it mean to say love makes all things new again?
Love makes all things new again? Well, you see, if somebody's down in the dumps, that means they're very sad. I'd say, I care about you. And then they go, pee-yoo!
Why is that?
Well, when a person knows somebody cares about him, they just feel great. They go pee-yoo!
Oh, I see.
No, that's the same thing as love.
What's the same thing as love?
Caring about people.
Well, suppose there were two people down in the dumps, Mr. President.
Oh, I just say, I care about you, I care about you, and go pew-pew.
Suppose 200 million Americans were down in the dumps, Mr. President.
I'd say, I care about you, 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 I care about you.
Love makes all things new again.
Hey, what was that?
Another sound of love from the Franciscans.
This is Mr. O once more. Let's go back to our story of Neanderthal. An auto wreck somewhere in France, and out of the past has come a man of the caves, a creature supposedly extinct for 50,000 years. The Frenchman Claude believes that this has happened, but the American Jim Brand does not. Now the two men are searching for the third member of their party, the Englishwoman who has suddenly disappeared. We give you again Neanderthal.
Well, it's nonsense, I tell you. Hallucination.
Eh?
Yes, hallucination. Driving along, we were talking about the Neanderthal man. So when we saw that hairy peasant, we immediately took for granted that, well, here was one of the Neanderthal come to life. I tell you, the air was hazy. Our nerves were shot. We saw things that don't exist.
Why is it so bitter cold? That, at least, is reality.
Keep moving.
So, I'll answer my own question. It is bitter cold because time has moved back to the third interglacial age.
Ah!
You do not believe the evidence of your senses. Yet perhaps you will believe that that is a campfire up ahead.
It is a fire. Here, quickly, Renner. Oh, quickly, can't you hobble faster? Kay, we'll get who's ever there to help us find Kay. Come, hurry, Renee, hurry.
It's the one we saw, all right. Keep your voice down. He will hear us.
What manner of man is he?
Time and time again I have told you.
But he and all like him have been dead 50,000 years. You said that yourself. Dead don't come back to life.
We have come into his life. Not he into ours.
Kay.
Keep your voice down.
Oh, but Kay.
She is not there. You can see for yourself.
Well, then she's lost. She's wandering around here.
Keep your voice down. I warn you.
Lunatic, savage, whatever he is. Perhaps he's seen Kay.
Get down, you fool.
No, I'm going to talk to him.
Stay down, Jeffrey.
Hey, you up there. Look. We want to talk to you.
You fool. What have you done?
See, he's coming this way. I'll settle this.
Oh, you... While we were unseen, we had a chance to plan, to do. But now...
Don't talk like that. I was in West Africa for 2 years. I know how to deal with savages.
Look at him. You think there is even a savage?
He stopped. afraid of us.
He's the ugliest beggar I've ever seen.
Friends, old man, you see? Friends, look, money. I bring you money and pretty things.
Mon Dieu, what a fool. Words of money for him. Geoffrey, look out.
Let me go, you...
Geoffrey.
Friends, I tell you...
Geoffrey, I can't help you.
Let me go.
Do not try to hold back your tears, my friend.
That devil.
I never realized before what pain the human mind could endure.
But why did he do this to me? Why?
Do you ask the wolf why it kills?
Oh, killing would be one thing, but...
Once I saw a gypsy break the wings of a wild bird.
Oh, René. Oh.
I never thought
that the time would come in my life when I couldn't reason something out. But this is beyond reason. Thrown into a cave like a side of beef to wait.
To wait for what?
What? Oh, my
wait.
Only...
Wait.
What?
Someone is coming. Ahead.
I hear nothing.
Listen. A woman. Kay.
Catherine. Is that you?
Kay, answer.
Oh, Geoffrey. Claude.
Oh, Kay, you.
Kay.
Oh, Catherine, are you all right?
Kay, where were you?
No, you. Are both of you all right?
Oh, we're all right.
We don't matter. You, are you all right?
It's so dark in here. Are you all right? Tell me.
Catherine, you.
It is you that matters. What?
No, listen. There's so little time.
Eh?
What?
He's busy building up a fire. There's a chance if we run quickly.
Run quickly?
Yes, come.
We're not at liberty to go, my dear.
Why?
A matter of broken bones.
Oh, no.
That is the way it is.
Tell me what happened. Geoffrey, you. Claude, you. Tell me what happened to us. That old... Who is he? Is he really a Neanderthal?
There is no doubt.
But men like that have been dead for centuries. How did it happen? Why are we here?
When the automobile went over the cliff, we went into another dimension of time.
What?
I don't understand.
And I, too, understand little. But can it be that events in time are static things, that everything which occurs remains in existence as life moves on further along the corridor of time?
Then you mean when the automobile went over the cliff, in some way we went back into time instead of forward?
We...
No. No, that's impossible. Things exist when they exist, not afterwards. No, there's a factual explanation to all this.
Factual? Is not the pain of our bones fact enough? Is not...
Wait! What is it?
A chant of some sort.
Why is he...
What is he saying? What?
The beginning of worship. A chant to the rising sun.
What is happening to us? Only a few hours ago. So happy, the three of us. On our way to a party.
Parties. Another age.
We've got to do something.
Strange.
What?
Only a few hours ago. I was the doer. And you, Geoffrey, the calm, poised diplomat of the green table.
Stop talking nonsense! Oh. Listen. He's coming in here. For us? We've got to do something. Do you hear me? Do something. I won't die. I can't die. Do you hear me? Do something. I won't die like this. I can't.
Geoffrey!
I'm sorry. I never could endure pain.
We understand, Geoffrey.
Try not to think, dear.
All my life, I've known what to say. And now...
Oh, Geoffrey,
no.
Don't.
Let me talk.
or I can talk. I'm a man. And I won't be a man when he gets in here.
If I had a gun.
A world of reason. And that's what it was to me. And everything could be settled with reason. In a world of reason.
If I had a gun.
Everything could be straightened out at the conference table. Yes. That's what I thought. All my life it would be that way. All my life. But you see, that was because I'd never met force in all my life.
If I had a gun.
But you can't reason with unreason, can you? When you're facing brute force, words and ethics and logic and good faith don't mean anything, do they?
If I had a gun.
You've got to face force with force. And a gun is force. And I've got a gun.
Jeffrey!
He's out of his head.
Yes, yes, I tell you, I've got a gun. Diplomatic service. They made me carry it. Oh, I hated it. I thought I'd never use it, but now we've got to, don't we? We've got to.
Oh, he's coming in here.
God, your right arm's all right. Reach in my pocket there. The gun, use it, use it.
But I
use it if we're to live, use it.
Jeffrey, it's reaching.
Come on.
Oh, my hands are, I can't.
All right, then. I'll shoot it.
So, it's morning.
We
go on living. Something may happen to return us to where we belong.
I don't think so.
Nor I. Perhaps we will be able to leave some record behind us so that the world of the future will know and understand this strange thing that has happened, this meeting of the present and the past.
Jeffrey, don't just stare. It's over. Talk to us.
I was thinking. I just killed a man. Yet, it's 50,000 years before I was born.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard a fantasy, just a story about a long time ago world where brute and unreasoning force were the order of the day and men were afraid until they found deep courage within themselves. Yes, what you heard was just a fantasy. But think about it in terms of what happened in the recent past of our world and what might happen in the very near future. Think about it. But let's talk more about that after a word from your announcer.
The world has known many kinds of love, but a deep, unselfish love is both noble and beautiful. This is Claire Bloom speaking for the March of Dimes. All of us know life must sometimes hold suffering and pain, but the one who loves endures. In this country, 250,000 babies are born each year with birth defects. That means 700 children a day, and how much love and understanding they all need. There are far too many forms of crippling. That's why the March of Dimes works to prevent birth defects. This work is supported by the compassionate concern of people like you. You see, the March of Dimes fights birth defects through scientific research, public education, and medical service programs. And contributions, an expression of your much-needed interest and support, are so very important. Remember, birth defects are forever unless you help. Please give to the March of Dimes.
Thank you. Well, I seem to be running out of time here, so I guess I'm going to quit. See ya.